It's Saturday, April 27th, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio, 88.9 and KUSP.org. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridge of the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxel. So please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. I'm Lyle Troxel, and with me in the studio, right next to the beach in Santa Cruz, is Bonnie Jean Primms, broadcaster, large mediator, and printmaker.
Hi, Bonnie. Why, in fact, there is sand in my toes right now.
Wow, that would be great, wouldn't it? Yeah. A little noisier, but it would be nice to be down there.
We should do this show live from the beach.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You can see the beach, kind of, if you lean out that way.
Hold on a sec, guys. We'll be right back. We're just going to get down to the beach.
Yeah, see you in 20 minutes. Ben Jaffe, web instructor and world traveler. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
All right, Ben, we're going to do sectional Geek Speak today.
Okay. Sectional Geek Speak.
So this section, hacking.
Hacking.
Got any hacking stories?
As a matter of fact, I do.
Please go.
Happens to be right up on my screen. So CBS had its Twitter feed compromised back on Sunday, April 21st, almost a week ago.
CBS, the network.
Yeah. Two Twitter accounts belonging to CBS. So they, of course, suspended the Twitter accounts after they were compromised. But they were compromised just after last Geek Speak on Saturday afternoon. And they tweeted out all of these
fake messages.
Lyle,
where were you right after Geek Speak last Saturday afternoon?
Interesting. So, yeah, you know, accusing Barack Obama of this and that and criticizing U.S. support for this and that and all that fun stuff. So that was the CBS Twitter account that was compromised.
Now, I'm assuming this is Twitter/CBS, right? That's how you follow them.
These news outlets own several Twitter accounts.
Because that Twitter account has 116,000 followers.
Which one? The main one?
Yeah, just CBS.
So I'm not sure if it was the main CBS Twitter account. Okay. It might have been certain sub-news Twitter accounts. Anyway.
Summary right there. Don't believe everything you read on Twitter.
That's
not news.
but I mean, people do. Actually, so a couple days later, the Associated Press had their account as well hacked.
The AP.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they
2 million followers, by the way.
How many?
2 million.
2 million. That's a lot of people.
Actually, it's not exactly 2 million. So, you know, they need another 20,000 or so.
But, I mean, it's not just 2 million Joe Schmoes.
No.
It's people who need to follow the news for, I don't know, let's say they are working with a Dow Jones Industrial or something like that, right? So what happened is the AP Twitter account didn't just, you know, send off some tweets that were criticizing the U.S. and criticizing these people and that people. They actually sent off a tweet that claimed that there was an explosion at the White House and the president was injured and stuff like that.
Okay, this was claimed by somebody that hacked the site.
Not true at all. Okay. But what happened is for 3 minutes, the Dow Jones took a huge plunge. Plunged 143 points. So that's $136.5 billion. Gone.
Whoa.
For a couple minutes. And then it was falsified and then it went back up.
Okay.
So it's just interesting because when I mean we're in the digital space all the time, right? We've got news sites. The news sites are what a lot of us get our news from.
Yeah.
The Twitter accounts are how we get up to date news. What happens when those services get hacked? You know, what happens when a notable and very watched website gets hacked? I mean, it's an interesting issue of trust.
So last week I talked about two-factor authentication, that everyone should move that direction. Twitter doesn't actually currently support two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
Two-factor identification. Let's do a little review.
Authentication.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the general idea, I covered it very well last week, so you can listen to last week's show. But basically the idea is that normally passwords are something you know. It's a secret you know. And that you can share, but also somebody else might guess it and therefore it's not effective. But instead of logging with just something you know, you can log in with something you know and something you have.
So like
that's
a
two factors.
Phone or something, right?
A phone, right. So you'd have some device that makes a random number. You have to have that object with you to log in. Another example of that is biometric information. You have to have your eyeball with you. That's why iris scans are so effective, right?
Of course, someone could steal your phone. They're probably unlikely to steal your eyeball.
Right.
But,
and that's actually why
except
that's
in
normally,
the movies. That
yes.
happens.
And that's actually, while normally biometric stuff is actually something you are, is how they refer to it. So there's something you are, something you have, something you know.
Anyway, yeah, like a fingerprint is another example. Of course, a fingerprint can be copied. So could iData. That's actually the issue,
something you are is actually really hard to determine. Like genetic testing, but then again, you could take a sample from somebody else, so you can take on a persona. Mm-hmm. So really, it's something you
ever
have.
Seen Gattaca?
Yeah, exactly. It's something you have and something you know.
That's a great
movie.
So
in any case, Twitter's not doing that, and clearly they're going to move there. And I was trying to look for see if there's a story about
it. When you say clearly they're going to move there because that's just the smart thing to do, or because they said, oops, now we're going
to
do that.
Yeah, I'm going to link to a great article from a few days ago on Mashable, which is just a discussion about Twitter and two-factor authentication, how it's an obvious they have to do this, especially if one of our main sources is Twitter's news, and that hacking an account on Twitter can cause the DAO to be moved. That means it's kind of important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really important. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. And I mean, you know, people say, oh, well, what's the, I mean, who cares if this thing gets hacked? Well, I mean, people make money off of this in all kinds of interesting and, you know, ways that you wouldn't think, right? You wouldn't think, oh, I'm just going to invest in, you know, blah, 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 or I'll wait for the DAO to drop because of my hacking attack and then invest and then make a bunch of money. I mean, you know, conceivably someone could have done that.
Absolutely.
Who knows? Maybe someone did. Another interesting thing about this, and there's actually an episode of Radiolab that talks about this in excruciating depth, and it's fantastic, is how the stock market is so, so automatic. There's so little human intervention there.
Automatic?
Automatically.
Because it seems especially sort of emotional and sensitive to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's...
It's just like one big panic attack.
Yeah. That's true, but I mean, it's so much of it is algorithms.
That's true.
Algorithms reacting to algorithms reacting. It's kind of like the way humans react to humans react to humans.
We have automatic tendencies too, though. Our body, you know, if I clap my hands really loud and fast behind you before you even process it, your body will react. So there's automatic qualities of human nature.
Literally
too.
Before you process it.
Yeah.
That's
what I meant.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's why I said it.
So the stock market reacts before brains do.
I don't know. Is that what you're trying to claim? Is that there's something that was reading, looking for the phrase Obama in an AP story?
I don't know if I would go that far. I don't know if I would go that far. But I mean, the idea is once something starts going a certain direction, it will probably accelerate at least for a while. Until it decelerates,
that's
you know,
just
because,
physics.
Well, I suppose so. Yeah, that would be interesting modeling a physical world with our monetary system.
All right, any other hacking?
Yes. Also, Living Social was hacked. Living Social is a similar website to Groupon, basically a daily deals site, right?
Okay. Daily deals.
Deals. So,
what does it look like when a thing? Like, what's the hack?
Wait, why is it called Living Social? What does that have to do with deals?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you'll have
purchasing
to ask them.
Purchasing social.
Maybe we'll have them on the show. I'll bet they probably don't want to come on the show right now because, so I asked you before the show, how many accounts do you think were hacked? And you said?
I said 10,000.
50 million.
Oh my gosh. Ooh,
so when 50 million accounts on Living Social are hacked, what happens? Like what gets hacked?
Well, okay, so Living Social has a bunch of information about you, right?
Not about me. I don't know about.
Well, about anyone who has an account. Right. They'll have your name, they'll have your email address, they'll sometimes have your date of birth. And of course, I'll have your passwords.
Okay,
now,
so
I do have to say,
information mining. They were like sending out fake coupons.
Yes. But I do have to say, Living Social did it right. They have hashed and salted all of their passwords. So even though the attackers have
know what that means,
the actual,
we've talked about that before in
we
a
have.
Previous episode.
But
and
basically,
I don't remember which one? But that's extra safety times.
Yeah, exactly. It means that even if a hacker gets access to all of your database, they probably won't be able to get to. Data inside of it, right? Mm-hmm. At least not the hashed and salted stuff. So that's good news.
And on their site, in the giant red banner, it says, important notice for customers. If you haven't already updated your Living Social password, please update it now. So it's clearly saying, do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Cool. So I don't know. Good on them for doing it in the first place and also for making a big enough deal that people will change their passwords and stuff.
The point, of course, anytime we see a security vulnerability is that the company respond to it extremely fast. That's the most important thing at that point. Mm-hmm. Telling people about it, fixing it, informing people what's going on.
I mean, it sounds like of the two kinds of hacking you just talked about, the sort of news Twitter feed hacking, different purpose for that hacking than the Living Social hacking. Living Social hacking just sounds like pickpocketing to me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that works.
And there's some sort of social engineering behind the CBS and AP Twitter feed had.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, I mean, really,
it wasn't really
is,
about scooping up some extra stock.
Yeah, the right. Well, it could, of course, it could be that if you can affect the stock market by affecting the AP account, probably you can do that with the Obama account too, right? So therefore, if you could hack into it somehow, mm-hmm. and then you get ready to do a whole bunch of purchasing, and then you hit it and it mm-hmm. dips, and you do a bunch, you could make a lot of money by doing.
There was a 3-minute window. It
right, that's enough
for 3
time
minutes.
To make millions of dollars easily. Mm-hmm. And if hacking the account is really just getting access to that one password, well, you can do that in lots of crazy ways. There's mm-hmm. there's been mm-hmm. examples of social. One of the first episodes of Geek Speak that we put online was actually a wonderful 2002, I think, interview with Kevin Mitnick, who's like a classic American hacker, if you will. And his book's all about social engineering. And it's really about like most of the flaws in systems can be taken advantage of by just taking advantage of a human's weakness to collaborate and talk.
Yeah.
And he has these stories about, you just call Blockbuster. That's when Blockbuster existed, right? Call Blockbuster and say, hey, I lived on the street, and or I work at another Blockbuster, and this customer's here, and he's really angry because I messed up, but supposedly we have his information on account, but I don't have it in front of me because my system's down. Can you tell me his credit card? And he's able to get the credit card through
that. That's how private dicks did their thing for years.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So social engineering, that idea of it. So I think that living social thing's really... I mean, so that's the being able to get into a Twitter account. You can do that kind of thing, yeah. like to get in, and it's very powerful. So anyway, so having something you have is important in logging in. I would assume that would be one way.
Yeah.
Living social thing just, it seems like another privacy concern.
It's just, yeah, hacking, but I mean, think about it. They're all ways in which people can make money, right?
Right.
I mean, different ways.
I don't think that's why CBS and AP Twitter feed were hacked, though.
No,
like,
I think
they found,
no.
they got some good information now, which someone else might run with, but mm-hmm. they had another purpose in mind, is my guess.
Probably.
I think you're right. I think it was just showing
also,
off.
They yeah. were, yeah. I believe they were different agencies. The CBS, some people are claiming responsibility for it. The AP, I haven't heard that anyone is.
All right, so. Let's move on.
Moving on.
This section, Geek Entertainment.
Futurama was canceled.
Again?
Futurama
again.
Is the
I was still getting around to watching it.
Do you watch it, though?
I mean, I have.
I've watched Futurama too. I've always wanted to like Futurama more than I do.
Yeah, that's been my
yeah.
I do like that drunken robot.
I like
though.
Bender too. Bender's pretty awesome.
That's me too.
Futurama is the thing that looks a little bit like the Simpson character. Same group that develops it, and it's a futuristic.
Yeah, there's a robot. There's all yeah. I have a lot of friends who are devastated. I just have to say that
really?
Because
okay.
all three of us are like, eh, you know. I mean, we're all geeks, and
yeah,
we,
it's not radio. We don't care.
It's weird how you feel sometimes. Like, God, I should be more affected by this. I feel bad for not feeling worse. You know, because we're geeks, and this is Futurama.
All right.
I got that more awkwardly about hard news stories, but yeah.
So, well, from an entertainment perspective, did you guys hear that Arrested Development has a new season?
Oh my gosh! How do you not hear about that?
Oh,
they're doing
love
such
it.
A just blitzy.
I haven't watched it.
Social
what's,
media campaign.
Yeah.
What's Arrested Development?
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't watch TV.
It's the most celebrated canceled series ever,
yeah.
as far as I can
oh,
tell.
Yeah.
Really?
Basically,
more than
the thing that's interesting about the new season is they it's a whole bunch of characters that interact with each other, right? And for the new season, every episode follows one character, and they're all the same time frame. So you can watch in any order, and you can pause one and then watch the other one. And that's kind of neat. So it's
also interweaving plot lines. And
mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and
they're
probably
they're really playing with the fact that people watch the whole season in one, you know, sort of delirious overnight marathon. Some bloodshot binge, yeah.
You know what people don't do like that? Mm. Watch Futurama. Okay, so let's... Sorry. I like the show. I want to like it more than I do. I don't watch it. All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
We're
going to
get angry
one
emails.
One more entertainment geek bit before we get to break.
I have more bad news or good news. It really depends on where you're coming from. Disney, of course, famously bought the Star Wars franchise.
Yes, they did.
And
that's not news, Ben.
So various sources have reported that Disney announced that they plan to release one Star Wars movie every year.
Oh,
that's starting in 2015.
No.
That's starting with episode 7. J.J. Abrams is doing that.
So my first reaction is kind of a tight yuckiness, but then the truth is, great, more films, more entertainment. Okay.
But I mean, talk about diluting a brand, right?
Yeah, it's over and it's over. I mean, first of all...
Oh, God.
First of all, you got the Disney aspect. Then you got the same guys doing the Star Trek movies doing the Star Wars movies. So yeah. Mushy.
Not cool, man.
Not cool.
That line needs to be separated.
Not cool. And then
the
one year...
The line must be drawn here. This far, no farther.
One year just turns them into the true junk food that they've become. It's just admitting what they already are.
Right. Mm. We're just trying to make as much money off this franchise as possible.
That's all it is.
Pay up, please. And you know what? I'll see every one of them. No, I probably won't. I'll go watch Futurama instead. All right, coming up next.
Wow. You're really not watching them.
Wow.
In our next section, robots and artificial intelligence. But first, we got some other stuff to talk about. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Bonnie Jean Princh and Ben Jaffe. Geekbit.
Yeah, I got two gigabits, and they're both very related. Recently, NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory released this video that Bonnie is looking at. Of course, a gigabit is something.
Gorgeous.
A gigabit is something that you kind of have to see, so we're going to post this up on the site. But it's basically 3 years of staring at the sun. This satellite has been staring
at the sun.
That's
not good for you at all.
I'm going to say this.
It looks like that there's been a lot of heavy filtering or something. It's so dim that it looks like the sun is something that's bright on the inside and has light leaking out of it.
Yeah, it's pretty beautiful. So basically it's 3 years of images in 4 minutes.
Nice.
So it's a video.
It's a video.
It's a serious time lapse.
Serious time lapse. It's pretty neat.
Well, I am glad that asteroid didn't listen to its mother. I mean, sorry, satellite.
Satellite, yeah.
That
was almost funny.
Could have been good. Could have been really
good.
Oh, I get it now. No,
I get that at the podcast.
Yeah, we do have editing capabilities. But also, there's another video, and this is actually from 2012, but I just put it up because it's very related. This is a picture of our moon rotating. And basically,
we don't normally see that from Earth.
Push play.
I'm pushing. Okay, Bonnie and I are watching now.
Yay! Out of 30,000 people, one person gets to see it. Yay!
You guys would love this.
This is our...
Geekspeak.org in about 10 minutes.
It's a video of the moon hour by hour as it goes through all of its phases.
Okay. So from Earth's perspective.
Okay. So you can see the moon waxing and waning, full moon, new moon. But there's also all of this other information around it. You can see the way the moon tilts from our perspective.
Oh,
you can
neat.
See
yeah, yeah.
how the Earth spins and how fast it's spinning and all this stuff. And there's all these numbers down in the bottom right corner.
It's so geeky. You got to see it.
You can even see as the moon.
It rotates in a way I did not expect.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's you usually see this over the
Does
course of a
Does everyone recognize
that
we're describing video, time-lapse video on the radio? Anyway, yes. geekspeak.org to see it. It'll be up there. Thank you, Ben, for that. If you'd like to call in with questions and comments about technology, Rick's into the room waiting to take calls. In about 10 minutes, we'll do so. The phone number is 800-655-5877, but that was too fast. So, 1-800-655-5877. You can ask us anything you'd like, and I'll invite and give the phone number again in about 10 minutes. So, robots and artificial intelligence, Ben, robot update.
All right. The Italian Institute of Technology, the IIT, has built a robot that builds IKEA furniture.
Perfect.
Finally, somebody can do it. Wait.
Wait, I can do it. I'm good at it.
Does IKEA lease this robot?
So, do they send it in a delivery truck?
Yeah, what happens is they send it in pieces and it gets to your house.
You have to put the robot together.
And then the robot puts together your IKEA table.
There's no words on the instructions. It's easy to put a robot together.
It totally solves the problem, doesn't it?
Wait, really though, what?
It's kind of cool. I mean, it's a prototype. Basically, you know, we're building robots that do all sorts of things. And most of the robots that hit the news basically do one thing, and it does one thing moderately okay to very well, depending on what
most
it's
trying
time,
to do. Most of the time they scare us.
Yes.
That's what robots do. I wouldn't say scare us. Hint at a bleak future, I think, is more what they do. Yeah.
They get us preparing our overlord bunker.
Yes. That's all Hollywood. But anyway, and also it's interesting because some of these robots are very anthropomorphizable,
yes.
right? You can, if that's a word, I don't know, but you can project human emotion on this robot. Like there's the Asimo robot that walks and it looks like a humanoid figure, right?
Dance and falls downstairs.
Keeps all Japanese people company.
But then you've got these robots that we covered a couple episodes ago. This dog that it looks like a dog, but
big dog.
Two of its limbs are bending the wrong way. They're all bending in. It's just like really
So what is this? What
freaky.
Is this IKEA building robot look like?
Does it just look like a machine assembly thing, or does it just
look
robot-y?
Like an arm.
Okay.
An arm that does stuff. I don't know. I mean, like, it's not all that exciting looking.
All right.
It's just kind of an interesting idea that
this robot story.
Do we really need a robot to help us assemble IKEA furniture?
It's not like a school project.
I think it would be really cool to make a robot that could, like, read in the IKEA furniture instructions and unbox the box and do it visual information. That'd be awesome.
I think this one builds one IKEA table. It doesn't build all the IKEA furniture.
It's just like a board with holes with threaded holes in it and four legs. It just screws in. Yeah, my Makita can do that too. All right, thanks for the robot update. Sorry, didn't creep me out. Anything about artificial intelligence that might kind of creep me out?
Bonnie,
better job of creeping.
How about this?
What?
Let's do kind of a stretch. I'm going to stretch this into something. Bonnie, you and I were talking about text messaging and how dangerous it is.
Oh, I mean, I heard on the radio, I think it was on NPR News,
of course,
that texting while driving is actually more dangerous than driving while drunk.
What if you're drunk and texting? Oh, just don't drive.
Yeah, really don't
Because there's
drive.
Drunk texting. Isn't that a term? So really, seriously, a sober like person texting
sober
is more
person
dangerous than a
more,
drunk person
yes.
driving.
The
okay,
drunk
don't
person,
text and drive.
Don't, yeah.
You know, I do. I'm commuting. I'm commuting Bear Creek now.
Yeah.
And luckily, I don't drive as fast as everyone because people are insane. Okay. And so there's a lot of time to pull over. So I just pull over and then I'll check my phone and wait a second to wait for the cars to go by. Kind of a, you know, there's actually lots of places to pull over unless you're on a freeway.
That's a good way.
Okay.
But...
What about doing text messaging vocally?
Yeah, we have
an iPhone 5 and everything.
Thing.
Yeah, the hands-free.
Yeah,
thing.
Where you say like, hello, computer.
computer, please text
computer,
mother.
Computer, hello. Yeah.
Text boss, late for work, too many fast drivers.
Yeah, but the problem is it goes boop, and you say, text Lyle, message, I'm late, period. And then
I just crashed my car just listening to you.
But then it goes diddling, working, and you look down at your phone, and it's still working, and you look at the road, and you look down at your phone, it's still working, and then you look down at your phone, and it says, text Lyle, I'm wait. And then
it does it wrong.
And then you have to hit the button back, or you have to say back. And I mean, where are your eyes during this? You know, your eyes are
down. Well, I think the whole idea is that your eyes are on the road, and you're just doing it vocally.
But that's the idea, but
it sounds like the technology's not there yet.
Even if the system says message, I am wait or whatever, even if it talks to you, you still look at your phone. That's what humans will do. Humans will look at their phone because there is a visual
interface.
So is this
like a study or something?
There was a study that showed that voice-activated texting while driving is not any safer than actually typing with a hand, you know, taking a hand off the wheel and typing.
Now, is that from the visual impairment of looking down the phone, or is that from just thinking about it and talking? Because there's also cases that show
hands-free driving is very dangerous.
It's been known to cause accidents.
Drive with my feet, Mr. Bean.
Some people do that and it works.
If you know how to do that, it's fine.
Yeah.
So the way they did this, they used a tracker. They measured how often the user looks at the roadway and how often or how long it took the driver to complete all of the tasks.
Ah, okay. So it
and
is
they
about
found,
looking away.
Yeah. They, here's the quote. It didn't really matter which texting method you were using. Your reaction times were twice as slow and your eyes were on the road much less often.
All right.
That was Christine.
So there you go.
Okay.
Listen
study was
to radio while driving.
Texas Transportation
Institute.
That's safe. AMU.
Just not on geek speak. Too much humor. Okay.
No.
So that wasn't exactly artificial intelligence, except for it kind of fits the theme because there's a computer interpreting what you're saying, which is kind of artificial intelligence.
And poorly.
That was nicely
done. I'm going to say that it's two things. One, humans' tendency to look at what they're addressing. Two, the voice-activated technology just isn't there yet.
Yeah.
Like Google Voice, that is not helpful. It's not helpful.
Google Voice
I agree.
Is not
Garbled.
The service, by the way. Just
Bonnie's concluded. We are done with that topic. Next.
Okay, next.
That is
let's do more serious artificial intelligence stuff. Like
Wolfram Alpha.
Yeah, I was going to say.
What is Wolfram Alpha? What is that?
I want to make a joke because the name is so goofy, but I can't think of any jokes to make.
It makes me think of that t-shirt with the three wolves on it.
What was it? One? Yeah, anyway.
What's Wolfram Alpha?
Wolfram Alpha. So Stephen Wolfram is the guy behind it. He is basically he became a... he was a scientist who was not in the darn it, I can't think of the word for it. But basically, he was doing independent science and made that into a business, right? He created something, well, he created Mathematica, or at least it was behind it, and he also worked on Wolfram Alpha. Wolfram Alpha, you can go to wolframalpha.com and type in something like, how many fish are in the sea? And it will understand what you're asking. It'll convert it into the proper query, estimation of total ocean biomass, and then it'll actually query all of these sources of data that they have in there to figure out what the answer is. It's a really powerful tool. It can do all kinds of stuff. And if you go to the website, you can see just how many kinds of things.
It's like a really good reference librarian.
Yeah, and it works with English. You type in an English question, and it'll do its best to interpret it. Pretty awesome tool. Recently, what they did is they started analyzing people's Facebook data. So they would let you connect your Facebook account to Wolfram Alpha to your Facebook account, and then they would analyze all your data and give you graphs. And it's actually really neat.
Who
I did it for the first time. nobody, as far as I can tell. Uh-huh. But anyway, I did it just yesterday or 2 days ago for the first time. Of course, my graphs weren't nearly as fun and exciting as most people's are, because I don't use Facebook very much and I don't put a lot of information into
it. What kind of information do they glean?
Well, the reason I'm covering this now, that you've been able to do this for a while, but the reason I'm covering this now is because he actually wrote 3 days ago on the 24th of April, he wrote a blog post talking about all of the information that they've gleaned from people who have voluntarily offered up their data sets to the Wolfram Alpha mathematicians.
So they're
and
interested in the data in the collective, not just for individual users.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and so they analyzed this data, and they got all kinds of really fun, interesting graphs.
Like
For example, you can see the distribution of number of friends for users, and for users and friends, and friends versus age. You can see that people around 19 or 20 definitely have more friends than people around 40. That's not very surprising, right?
Hey, what are you saying? So it's true. I had more friends when I was 19 or 20.
I'm still Facebook friends with some of them.
One of my favorites is if you look at people who are 15, 20, 25, 30, and you look at the distribution of those people's friends' ages.
Okay,
right?
So we got
the age range of a
people
person.
They know.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
a 20-year-old, what age ranges they know? I'm assuming that that's mostly 20-year-olds.
It's mostly
right?
going to be 20-year-olds. That makes sense because people are in college. You know?
Yeah.
Same with 30-year-olds, same with 35-year-olds, same with 40-year-olds. But here's where it gets really interesting. When you go up to around age 50, you see a huge spike in 50-year-old friends. But, which
makes
predicted.
Sense, falls along.
But then you also see this little dip, and then there's a bump somewhere around 22, 23. Kids, right?
Yes.
So 50-year-olds
their
who
children.
Had kids.
My
their
kids
children,
and my friend's kids.
Gotcha.
Their children, maybe their
they're
children's
on Facebook
friends.
Now. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, so you can see this spike of...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and as you increase this, 51, 52, 53, that moves up. It's really cool seeing trends that you expect to see in data. It's really neat to actually
so
see
So as
that
you get
real.
Older, you know a more diverse... age of people.
That's the other thing that
they
have.
It's like it gets even more diverse the mm-hmm. older a user is, the more diverse the age range of their Facebook friends are.
So once you get from 50, where your spike is at 50, to if you're 60 years old, you have a smaller spike at 60 and you have a huge spike at 30. Because you're more likely, I guess, to know people who are...
You're hanging out with your friends, your kids' friends.
Yeah, and they're 30, so it's not as big of a deal as when they're 20. When they're 20, you know...
You don't want to hang out with them.
You don't want to hang out with your friends.
I don't want to hang out with anyone in their 20s. Oh, sorry, Ben.
And then around age 70, you have barely any friends who are your same age. And you've got tons of friends from 20 to 50. So it's really interesting seeing this shape kind of morph as you increase it. And they give you an interactive version.
So what you're saying is statistically, people in their 70s on Facebook don't have a lot of friends in their 70s.
Yeah.
But then again, statistically, most of the users of Facebook aren't 70. So.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
but
we'll check in back with these graphs. In
let's check
years.
In 30 years. Exactly.
Well, yeah, of course.
In 30 years, when I'm 70, how many friends will I have that are 70 that I'll be on Facebook? When Facebook will exist?
I mean, that's a good point.
Will you guys be my friends for that many years?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Woohoo!
I don't know.
The other thing you
that.
Can do on Wolfram Alpha, because we mentioned it, I wrote down how fast does the sun rotate? And it answered 4,517 miles per hour. And a whole bunch of information about the statistics and what that means and the equator and all that stuff. So that's the kind of questions you can ask. Really awesome.
That's different from, like, Ask Jeeves.
It's better.
Ask Jeeves.
It works.
Ask Jeeves. It works. That's unfortunately kind of true.
Yeah.
Ask Jeeves, I think, was trying to answer the question you give it. Wolfram Alpha is trying to not only answer the question you give it, but to give you all the information you would possibly need around that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not so just how fast does the sun rotate. It tells you a bunch more information.
You can also look at the metric about how it determined that. You can have it kind of break that down and show a little bit more.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's Wolfram Alpha. And thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Great
yeah.
update on artificial intelligence
Some
and robots.
Are very
Love
pretty.
It. Ben, do you have a space update? We do this space updates quite
space.
A bit.
Which space update? Oh, this is the one that we covered. Oh, the Hunt for Asteroids one.
Yeah,
I do. But I have to pull it up. I'm sorry.
And then we're going to get into discussion about some privacy issues, actually, is what we're going to talk about next.
All right. So I just have far too many stories up in here. But basically the idea for this one is there is a company called Planetary Resources, and what they want to do is they want to mine asteroids. Now, why would you want to mine asteroids?
Well, because we're out of stuff over here.
Yeah, we're out of stuff over here. Well, I mean, so asteroids have a lot of interesting things in them. Of course, they have things that we don't care so much about, like rock and ice and everything.
Minerals.
But they have all kinds of interesting minerals and metals and things that are rare on Earth. So, for example, gold or platinum. At first glance, you could say, all right, well, it makes sense. If you've got this big asteroid that has a whole bunch of gold in it, it makes sense to mine it, to try and capture it, mine it, send the gold down to Earth, make up a whole bunch of money, profit, you know? But actually, it turns out that probably you're going to make more money selling asteroid bits or asteroid rocks, right? Because,
right.
I mean, how often do people run across rocks that come from outer space? And they go for a pretty high premium. So that's basically the story. This company has the backing of a lot of people. Eric Schmidt, Larry Page of Google, James Cameron, some NASA project managers, engineers, and scientists and things. So they actually have a good chance of making this work. They also have their own little legitimate for-profit business that's running on the side, and their idea is they're going to launch a satellite, look for these near-Earth objects that could potentially be candidates for capturing, and then potentially go and capture some. Now, the thing I find so interesting about this is last week, I talked via Canada. I was in Canada. I recorded a bit, right? And I talked about how we are spending a little bit more money on looking for asteroids, which is a really good thing considering that they're the thing that could wipe us out without much notice. What's so interesting to me is that this story shows that a large amount of our looking for asteroids is not because we're worried.
Self-preservation?
Yeah, it's not self-preservation. It's profit. Like, it's economics.
Self-preservation
it's
of a totally different kind.
Hey, we could make some money here. Why don't we look for some asteroids? Not like, oh, an asteroid could hit Earth. We really need to get on top of
this. Well, you know, the other thing
don't blow it up. We want to mine it.
The other thing you mentioned actually last week was that there was going to be a rocket that was going to take off. Did it happen?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, so that's the second, let me see if I can get, I think it's the second private industry to launch into space.
And the Antares.
The Antares rocket.
Very cool. And
so,
it worked.
It worked. It got delayed a couple times. The launch got delayed. But, you know, it went up.
Well, I'll take this opportunity to mention also, I mentioned last week that the Cyber Information Sharing and Protection Act, the
CISPA
Act, passed the House and how much I didn't like that. And I talked about there was a great EFF article, and you can listen more about that from last week. But here's a quote from Michelle Richardson, the legislative counsel with the ACLU. I think it's dead for now. Yay! Right. CISPA is too controversial. It's too expensive.
Expansive.
It is. You want to do the quote?
Well, it says here it's not just the same sort of program contemplated by the Senate last year, which was a problem. She says, we're pleased to hear the Senate will probably pick up where it left off last year. So what does that mean? That means that it's going to be, they're going to propose something that's more outrageous and therefore shoot downable? I'm not quite sure what she's saying there.
I think, what the Rockefeller is saying, the chairman of the committee, saying that it's really important privacy protections are insignificant. Mm-hmm. So basically, the the privacy concerns that, as the reason I brought it up, it's just insignificant. And the idea is that the next bill would actually enforce the idea of neutralization of personal information from the reports that come from the government without subpoena. So basically, you're looking for some bad activity. You ask some giant ISP, give me some data. They say, okay, just a second. And they prune the data of personal information, and then they send it your way. And then you find something, okay, this looks really bad. You convince a judge. The judge says, okay, give the information of who that person is. Mm-hmm. So there's a two-step process that involves neutralization of private data prior to a judge's. So it still allows you for really fast access to potentially interesting information for the government to track down a concern, mm-hmm. but it still protects privacy. And that's exactly what we want, right? So the Senate's doing the right thing, which is just, it's a great update. Okay. I'm just really happy about
that.
Okay,
glad to hear that.
In a minute, we're going to talk about, kind of the wake of privacy with regards to the Boston events and a really interesting quote from somebody kind of important about what that looks like as it hits us. This is Geek Speak on KWSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Ben Jaffe and Bonnie Jean Primsch. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. Anything you'd like. If you something piqued your interest during the show, or if you've got a problem with your computer, give us a call. We'll give you our opinions and chat with you on air. The phone number is 800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And while we're waiting for calls, Ben, what's going on with the New York commissioner?
So yeah, New York City Police Commissioner had a very interesting quote. The quote was, and this is, I'm sure there was a little context around this, but the quote was, quote, "I think the privacy issue has really been taken off the table." That's the quote.
Okay.
And it's with respect to surveillance cameras. So the idea is they want to put more surveillance cameras on there, touting the success of surveillance cameras and identifying suspects for the Boston
bombing
stuff. Yeah, the bombing. And I don't know. I mean, like, it's an issue that is certainly up for debate, of course. You know, like, need more or yeah, fewer surveillance, or what's the deal?
And just let's talk about the media aspect of this too. The Verge, a very large mm-hmm. organization, their subtitle to this headline is "Authorities Using Terror in the Wake of the Boston Bombing to Justify Expansion of Public Surveillance."
That's right? What it sounds like.
It's exactly that. It's the tone of how he's saying it.
Privacy is off the table. We're not going to consider it. Go, cameras, go.
Right. And then the Verge's main photo is a picture of a police department security camera powered by, always on security camera on a telephone pole, right? This mm-hmm. idea that the entire city will be covered with surveillance systems. And so the thing that always interests me about this is that one of the major problems we had with the Boston situation, we talked about this last week a little bit, was that the feed was coming from lots of people. There's a lot of video to look at, right? There's a mm-hmm. lot, and you had to kind of crowdsource that information because it's so hard to process.
Work so well, though.
It didn't. There was a lot of complications and confusions. But having more video or more photos isn't necessarily that doesn't help us, right?
The question is, does having more than some help?
Right.
What is enough?
And then also, what does it look like financially for an organization to put up cameras everywhere? Like, you have to get a lot of investment. Lot of investment in that kind of situation.
Well, and for the future, we look to England. It has mm-hmm. been said that no one does dealing with sort of domestic terrorism better than the Brits. And what the Brits are doing is having cameras everywhere. Are those two things related?
Yeah.
Right. I think maybe so.
So here's another question is, in terms of our privacy, where we are. I mean, you know, like police officers are not supposed to put GPS tracking devices on your car if it's in your driveway, for example, right? So you're saying basically like, oh, the police can't track you. But at the same time, they can track your vehicle because I'm in a lot of places, police cars have cameras that are always on.
Yes.
And they can do OCR, that's basically taking an image of a license plate and converting that to text. And then if they just collect that data and mine that data, I mean, they have a record of where your vehicle has been. What is it going to look like when facial recognition technology is to the point where they can just track you wherever
right.
you go, especially if they have a lot of coverage?
So the police commissioner, Ray Kelly, promised in a New York City Police Department is expanding its already massive network of cameras. The total number of public sector surveillance cameras in New York City is about 3,000 to 6,000. So that's how many cameras we're talking about.
Yeah.
And earlier this week, Kelly was talking about how the smart cameras that allows police remotely to zoom in, pan around, and recognize suspicious packages and read license plates. So there's the city itself has an infrastructure where you can do that, which is kind of amazing because, like, how do you actually manage 6,000 cameras? Mm-hmm. Like, 3,000, 6,000.
It is phenomenal.
And one of the quotes is, you're never going to know where all of our cameras are. So this idea that, so the question is, like, do you want to live in a society that's like that? Like,
it's too late if you want to or not. It's here.
Right.
It's here.
And then, of course, there's packages where people wear cameras that you don't even see that are on their clothing and recording all the time, and they own those and then put on social networking. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's things like wearable cameras, right? The Google's got Google Glass, right? That's a not always on, but that's something that's a kind of cameras immersiveness is existing anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. It's just one of those things that kind of creeps me out. When I see cameras on telephone poles that are supposed to capture license plates when you run through the red light, I think, well, that's a great way to make sure people don't run through red lights. That's a real danger. But at the same time, there's also laws about whether you're texting your car or not, right? Mm-hmm. Like we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And theoretically, those cameras could also be filming all the time and trying to detect when that happens, right? So this idea that where is the line that's inappropriate? I would say let's support, if texting is so dangerous, let's do more and more to protect that. Therefore, yeah, let's look into people's cars. So now we're in the situation where we're scanning, detecting. Like, yeah. Exactly. It starts to become kind of creepy.
But for me, there are two issues here, two very distinct issues. One is, do we put more security cameras? Do we do more surveillance? And two is,
how do we process
someone who says something like, I think the privacy issue has really been taken off the table. I don't want him anywhere near all of that data. You know what I mean? Like that is what scares me, is the mentality behind it. It's not so much that the data is being collected that bothers me personally. Of course, other people will be bothered by the data being collected in the first place. But for me, it's about, it makes sense to collect that data in some situations, but it needs to be responsibly managed. And people saying things like that scare me.
All right. Let's go ahead and take some calls, I think. The phone number, if you'd like to call in with questions or comments about technology, is 1-800-655-5877. And Elizabeth from Aptos, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Interesting show today.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I heard that the UCSC Digital Media program is having the open house this weekend, and I've never gone to it, and you always talk about it, but this year I realized you're not working there anymore. But I wondered if you could say anything about what it has been in the past and what it might be. And
you know what?
Go.
I gotta say that it's a pleasure to be able to talk about while I'm not working for UCSC, because I don't have that whole conflict of interest thing anymore.
Oh.
It's awesome. You gotta go. It's great. Is that too much conflict of interest?
Okay.
So it's the Digital Arts and New Media Masters of Fine Arts program, Digital Arts and New Media, not to be excluded by another department that's similar in name. And I worked there for like 11 years, 10 years. I just stopped working there. But I did help plan the show, and I actually know all the artists and have been working with them, and now no longer do. But the show is called Ground Control, and it's ground with parentheses CTRL, so it's kind of clever programmatic kind of thing. I didn't come up with a name, but I thought it was cool when they decided on it. And it's a collection of 8 artists, and they're all got interesting perspectives on art and social content and technology, and that's all mixed together. And the show opened yesterday, and I'm going to it on Thursday when the actual opening, grand reception opening happens, where there'll be wine and cheese and talk and presentation. And you want to make sure to hit this show in the nighttime, because one of the places, Catalina Giraldo, has a projection mapping system on the building that I helped design, the dark building.
Wow.
And so it's going to be really kind of engaged. And I've seen some stills of it, but I haven't actually seen it go.
And you said it's, I couldn't quite hear it. You said it's not to be confused with, like, where...
So there's a film department, film and digital media. That's an undergrad. It's a different department. They've got a PhD program, an undergrad program, and such. But the program we're talking about is the Digital Arts and New Media Masters of Fine Arts program.
What college is it at?
It's at the arts. It's in the arts complex. It's between the arts center, the arts department, the music department, and theater. It's the same place you'd park to go to Shakespeare's Santa Cruz, right? And it's right there, and it's the new building with a bridge on it called the Dark Building. And if you get there in the evening on May 2nd, there'll be a reception, and it'll be awesome, and I highly recommend it. I'll be there.
Thank you very much.
Actually, a lecture by Will Wright and the Media Theater right up the road from there will happen from 6 to 7, and I'm going to go to that too. So I'm actually looking for a babysitter, because I think this one's going to be one of those ones where I want to – you could bring your kids, but I want to actually engage in the pieces at a level that might require me to be more adult-focused. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the suggestion of talking about it. Thanks so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
So, yeah. Was that too salesy there? for a public radio?
No, I mean,
it's education,
basically. I don't have that filter on today.
Okay, good.
It's fun to hear you so excited about this on air. I mean, because you've never been able to. It's always right before the show or right after their show. You're like, oh my God, what's going on?
Right,
at
normally
UCSC?
I'm all stressed
so cool.
out.
Yeah.
You can just enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, for the last 9 years I've done this show and just hated myself right now. My hair is pulled out. And it's a lot of work to put up an art show of this nature, right? We got projectors and there's robots and there's micro projectors and Raspberry Pis hanging from the sky. And it's really cool. Anyway,
Raspberry Pis being delicious. The hardware, yes. Not the delicious.
Actually,
one.
I don't know if he went with Raspberry Pi because I don't think it had enough hardware. I didn't have enough support. Jacob Garb is really? The guy I'm talking about. He does this amazing. Okay, just go.
Anyway.
If you want to learn more about it, go to danum.ucsc.edu. DANM, Digital Arts and New Media. Okay, let's move on. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Ben, we have time, and you wanted to talk, so go for it.
Oh, yeah. So I was reading on Wikipedia, always a big time sink.
Oh, wait,
right?
This is the geek word of the week, right?
Geek word of the week.
Word of the week.
Entoptic phenomenon.
What?
And that is
entoptic.
Entoptic. So optic, eye. So when you see visual distortions, right, a lot of times you will make the assumption like, oh, it's something external to me, like, oh, it's a UFO, or oh, it's a you know, those kinds of things. But there are all these phenomena that happen that are inside of your eye or part of your visual system that, you know, a lot of times you won't think. And a lot of times if you look at a bright blue sky, you'll see these things kind of floating in the sky. Mm-hmm. And those are actually floaters on your eyeball. So I just wanted to go through a couple of the things that you tend to see and what they're caused by.
Don't tell me about all the worms in my eyeball.
No, they're not worms.
No parasite talk.
So basically, the floaters that you see most often are the shadow images of objects that are suspended just above your retina. So they're kind of floating on the surface or inside of your eye. They could be individual red blood cells that are swollen up, or it could be change of these cells. It could also be coagula of proteins. So these proteins that are just clumped together and hanging out on your eye or in your eye. It's kind of pretty cool. And I mean,
what are these things called?
Floaters. It's the typical.
No. So what's this? Oh, is this whole word we're talking about?
Oh, entoptic phenomenon.
Entoptic. You sound like Stewie Griffin when you say this word. It sounds like it's a little wrong.
Entoptic.
Entoptic. Okay.
Yes.
Entoptic.
A couple of the other causes of different interesting visual distortions that you'll see, and you can read all about this on Wikipedia. I'll put a link up on
all
the show page.
Definitely.
White blood cells that are moving at the capillaries in front of your retina. So what'll happen is because the white blood cells are a little bit bigger than the red blood cells, they have to deform a little bit to fit, and they kind of block up the capillaries and move more slowly. And so you get these red blood cells that are stacking up behind the white blood cells, and you can actually see that in certain situations depending on what you're looking at or the visual conditions. You can also see refractions in the optics of your eye, kind of like what happened if you saw the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. There are a bajillion lens flares all over the place, you know. It's like every shot has a lens
extra
flare.
Little hexagons of light,
hexagons or circles of lights, yeah. that kind of move. Like if you look at, if you point a video camera at the sun or near the sun, then you can see all these little circles, and that's just because of refractions and reflections inside of the optics of the camera. Same thing with your eye. So you can actually see those things. There's a thing called Purkinje tree. Let's see if I got that right. But it's actually you seeing an image of the retinal blood vessels in your own eye. And so what happens is if you shine a light into your eye at the right angle, you can see this. And then your eye adapts. And
this is when
you're
having fun with flashlights at night, right? Where you're like kind of...
Yeah, yeah. And so your eye adapts and then the image disappears.
Yeah.
But if you take the light and you point at your eye, point it away, point at your eye, point away, about once a second, then your eye won't be able to adapt. And you can actually see this just hanging out in your visual field.
I love how much we talked about visual phenomenon on the radio today.
this should have been my geek bit, right?
More geek bits. I'm not seeing any pictures here. So I'm like trying to stare at a light and then look away to see if I can make it.
I know. Monty and I are like looking weird at lights.
Wow.
Oh, the flashlight on me.
So I got two more. Right. One is that you can actually see visual phenomena because of light diffracted through your eyelashes. So that's a pretty cool one. And it's up to you.
Does
whether
that
you
count?
Yeah, I was going to say. It's up to you if you want to consider your eyelashes part of your visual
system.
Yeah, but that's kind of up to you.
Depends if I have mascara on.
And then this is an interesting one, too. It's called a phosphine, and that is when you perceive light without any light. It's because, for one of the examples, is if you push on your eye, on your closed eyeballs hard,
with a
you'll actually, with a hammer. No.
You can also just squeeze your eyes really tight, Okay, we can do that one, Bonnie.
Yeah.
You can actually see.
That's what it started with, actually.
Yeah, you perceive light.
Oh, yeah, I see that,
And one of
So if you're not driving, close your eyes really tight for a moment and then release, and that reddish color that you see, or has potentially has a color, is not actually real light. It's something else.
It's your perception. Yeah.
I was,
and actually, I read once that I don't know if they still do this, but in Scientology, what they'll do when you see the well, I don't know, see the light, or you, when you're enlightened, or I don't know what term they use, what they'll do sometimes is in their ritual, they'll have you have your eyes closed, and they'll come up behind you and they'll take their fingers and push really hard just for a second on your eyeballs, and you see this bright flash of light. Because of the, this phosphine phenomena, and you're enlightened. You
want to see? You want to see some light, Ben? Poke.
Yeah, right.
So I was about a mile and a half down a cave when I used to do spelunking, and we,
spelunking is such a weird word. I just have to say that it doesn't sound like.
You know why spelunk or spelunk?
Why?
Because it's not there.
What?
So what? You know a mountain climb? Why you climb a mountain? Because it's there. Why you spelunk? Because it's not there. So I'm down, way down there. We turn off our lights, and relatively quickly, your eye, you start seeing stuff because your eye is trying to do something. There's no light, but it emulates.
Are you bringing that up? Because we just got an email from Don Cochran that says there's a theory that some of the geometric images in the Lascaux Caves are representations of Antoptic images.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. And he gave us a little link to one of a horse. That may be, in fact, based on Antoptic imagery. Wikipedia link.
Very cool.
So we'll have
thank
that
you,
at
Don.
The website.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Don.
You can also call. Well, today, I think we're actually out of time to call in, so no more calls. So it's always good to get those. Ben, we got one more little thing we can try to squeeze in here, if you don't mind. Tell us about software upgrades.
Yeah, so this is just a quick one. Basically, we still have, unfortunately, a lot of people using Windows XP. And the idea is you should not be using Windows XP because it's an old operating system. Turns out that some people can't upgrade because it's not just about buying the new system. It's not just about buying Windows 7 or Windows whatever. If you're a medical professional, sometimes you have very specialty medical software, and it's $10,000 to upgrade. So
more expensive for doctors to upgrade.
Bad news.
Yeah. Hey, this has been Geek Speak for March 27th, 2013. With me in the air room is Bonnie Jean Premsch and Ben Jaffe. Thanks, guys, for joining me. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of by David Lawrence, and he's used by permission. Thank you, David. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. To find out more about this episode or any episode of Geek Speak, please visit us at geekspeak.org. We'll see you next week. I'm Lyle Troxell. Thanks for listening.